Welcome to the Blazers Edge podcast. We are the Fanalists. I'm Tara, and this is Joe.
Hey, everybody.
And we are here to open our hearts and spill our guts and talk about everything we love about the Portland Trailblazers and the NBA. Today, we are joined by a very special guest. Can't wait to introduce him. Before we do that, let me just give y'all a quick reminder that you can subscribe to the podcast using Stitcher or iTunes or whatever podcast catcher you prefer, or just hop on over to the site where you will find the podcast, tons of other great content coming out every day. Our writers are awesome. So visit blazersedge.com and see what is going on over there. Now, Joe, would you like to just go ahead and introduce our guest?
Yeah, I'd love to. The listeners might know him more fondly as the Grand Poobah, but I think I'm going to start referring to him as the guy who once said, for a while there, you couldn't swing a cat without hitting a Blazers blogger, because I read that while reading up on him a little bit, and it made me chuckle. I think it's great. But it's the great Dave Deckard, managing editor of the Blazers Edge and host of the original Blazers Edge podcast. He writes, he addresses questions, checks the mailbag, adds content to the website. He's just an all-around dude, and we're excited to chat with him and get to know more about him. Hey, Dave, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty well, although I'm trying to follow what Tara said, spilling guts and opening. It sounds like surgery.
That's what's going to happen here, Dave. We're hoping that someone's going to be crying by the end of this. I mean, we really want to get to the bottom of it.
It will be me, I am sure.
Well, we are really, really happy to have you here today, and we're looking forward to getting to know you. So I want to jump right in and ask if you might start from the beginning and tell us about how you became a Blazer fan.
Oh, how I became a Blazer fan. My goodness. When I was a little guy, I came downstairs to the basement one day, and my dad was watching TV on our Zenith television set. And there
what's
was this,
that?
Yeah, exactly. It was back in the days when I was the remote control, when dad would say, go switch it to channel 2. But there was this thing going on the TV with bouncing balls and guys throwing it around. And I said, what's that? And my dad said, oh, it's basketball. And he said, see those guys in the white clothes? That's our team. I said, what do you mean our team? He said, well, this whole city's, you know, because we lived in Portland, Vancouver at the time. And I said, oh, we have a team. And I sat down and started to watch. Well, lo and behold, that was the year that they won the title and everybody started watching. So I was like, this is the best thing ever.
Set the bar high.
It did. In my mind, I thought, oh, wow, every year we get to watch them win a championship. And I was I remember sitting up watching the finals. That was past my bedtime in some cases. But it was thrilling. And, I watched and I was enthralled when they won. I remember sitting staring at my ceiling with just a huge smile on my face. And then, of course, we started listening to Bill Shawn the radio the next year, because not all the games were televised back then. And I had to go to bed. They wouldn't let me stay up for regular season games because there was school. So our house had like heating ducts in the floor, you know. So I would get off my bed and go down on the floor and put my ear to the heating vent, and they would be playing the game in the kitchen on the radio, and I would listen to it until the Blazers won, which they usually did. And it was just fantastic. It was heartbreaking when Bill Walton got injured and when they did not win the next year. That was my first exposure to major crushing disappointment. And now here it is 40 years later, and they still haven't won again, but I carry the memory with me to this day.
Quick follow-up to that. Have you ever felt that elated ever again as the night they won the championship?
I don't think that you do. I mean, there's something pure about it when you're a kid. I remember I was at the right age for Drexler's team to hit me in very young adulthood, late teenager years, which was another grand time, by the way. I mean, I think that's another age where you're really affected by stuff. And of course, you understand more at that point than you do when you're small. And had they won it then, I think that would have been a similar experience. But I remember distinctly thinking in 1999, 2000, which of course was a little bit of mixed feelings, traveling all-star team, but the beginning shadows of the Jailblazer era. I remember thinking, it's going to be fantastic if they win it, but it won't quite be the same. Part of that was I was older. Part of that was the makeup of the team. And of course, you lose your idealism. I expected to win championships in the Roy Oden-Aldridge era. Of course, that never got off the ground. But now I think I wouldn't feel the same elation. What I've always said is the day that they win another title, I will probably jump off the couch, throw my fist in the air, run around the couch a couple times, and then immediately break down crying because of all we've been through in the meantime, but also the joy and the sadness and everything's much more bittersweet once you get used to life. So I think it won't be the same kind of pure elation, but it will still be profound, just maybe a little sad as well.
I know if it happens for me, I'm going to be elated out of my mind. I've been waiting my whole life for this. I'm tired of waiting.
Well, yeah, exactly. And people don't understand this. I mean, this is, I think, a fair point to make and one that I hint at a lot when I write. There's greatness and then there's capital G greatness. And the Blazers haven't seen capital G greatness for a long time. I mean, you can go back to those Drexler teams to see the last true example of it. The Rasheed Wallace teams were very, very good, but they never passed that border, I think, into truly great. So people don't know. There's entire generations of people who are basically, I think, buying selling points and looking at incremental growth and saying, well, this could be something maybe. And Blazer fans need another injection of truly great San Antonio Spurs, Golden State Warriors-like play to kind of re-educate the fan base a little bit and help us be more discerning and in some ways more wise.
So, Dave, when you were a kid, were you a fan of basketball or were you a fan of the Blazers? I mean, could you tell the difference? Did you play basketball or was it, you fell for the team and you fell for what they did?
Let's see if I can do this in order. No, yes, no, yes. No, I was very much a fan of the Blazers. I wanted to grow up to be 6'11" exactly, have red hair, and play center for the Portland Trail Blazers. That was my career goal. I remember distinctly my mom yelling for me out the doorway when I was in fifth grade. I was across the street at Western Baptist Seminary on 57th Street between Hawthorne and Madison in Portland, shooting baskets. I had to, by the way, I honed my skills there because there was a horrible, and to this day, I believe still is, a horrible briar hedge right behind the hoop. And if you missed your ball, and we had rubber balls because we couldn't afford that leather stuff, right? If you missed and it went into those hedges, that was the end of your day and maybe your month because your ball was going to pop. So I learned to shoot very accurately to keep my ball safe. But anyway, my mom called me and I came and she said, "Your teacher just called and she says you're like 30 math assignments behind." And I was like, "Well, yeah, mom, but I'm going to play for the Blazers, so it doesn't really matter." And she pulled me inside and made me make those up. But in any case, I loved the Blazers. Everybody else was an enemy. I did play basketball. I used to have free throw shooting contests with myself where three Trailblazers would be in it and like 32 other NBA guys. I'd shoot free throws for them all and make sure that the other guys missed enough to where the Blazers won. I mean, that was what I cared about. Eventually, I grew to love the rest of the league. And of course, as you get in media circles, you begin to love the game and good things about it rather than just a team. But my heart was, and I suppose always will be, with the Blazers first and foremost.
What was the first thing you ever remember writing about the Blazers?
Oh gosh.
Did you ever write an essay like when you were in school?
Probably. I tried to like draw some kind of basketball something when I was in like fourth or fifth grade, and that's when I found out I was horrible at drawing. But the first thing I really wrote probably came with the age of the internet, and I was new to it. But there were like message boards on AOL or something, I forget even what now. But I left like one message on it or one paragraph or something. Never went back to it, but some guys contacted me from that and said, "Hey, we're forming a little email group to have, genuine good talk about the Blazers. None of this message board stuff and trolling and all that. Do you want to join us?" I said, "Sure, why not?" And it came to pass that I just started communicating with them regularly, and we would talk. I mean, there would be like seven, eight emails a day, and there would be like three or four paragraphs each from each person. And that's really where I honed my writing and my analysis and got used to listening to people and analyzing and stuff. So that was really my break in. And we had some media guys in that group eventually, and that's how I eventually got my break blogging. But it really came with typing and talking was how it all started.
So, and then that transformed into Blazer Thoughts. Is that what happened? I mean, when did you start your first blog?
There was an intermediate step there. I think I've told the story that Eric Marantette, who was at Oregon Live, was part of our group, and he was and is a fantastic guy. And he had to go away for like a couple weeks, so he said, "Hey, Dave, will you come take over the Oregon Live site?" I said, "Sure, why not? What do I have to do?" He said, "Just write, man." I think it was the off season, I think. So I did, and I started writing like twice a day, and I started having a lot of fun with it. And it's like once I got done with that, and he came back, I said, "Well, I'm gonna try. I just want to keep writing." So I started a little WordPress site or something like that called Blazer Thoughts, and that was pretty good. And about that time, Casey Holdall moved to Oregon Live. Marantette went to work for Kobe Bryant. Never been the same since. So Casey said, "Hey, I started this site. It's kind of my baby, but I got to move on." It was only a few months old at that point. And he said, "Do you want to take it?" And I said, "Well, sure, why not?" He told me it was with a network, and that seemed like a step up. And that's when I met Tyler Blazinski, who was the president of SB Nation and really a guy who was committed to a lot of the same things I was committed to. It was like honest talk, smart talk, no BS, the kind of discussion and dialogue that you want to have around sports. Sports, as opposed to the kind of discussion and dialogue you usually get around sports, and the whole thing being geared to the people who read and having active participation. And that just chimed, and I chimed with his vision as well. And then Blazers Edge took off and kind of became, one of the banner sites for the entire network, and it remains so to this day.
I'm, for one, I'm very glad that you started doing that. I mean, I'm happy that Casey got it started and that you were already honing your skills in other places so that when he needed to go on, you were there to pick up from what he started. One of the things that has always drawn me to Blazer's Edge is the community and the pretty strict, not strict, but the community guidelines that you take really seriously there, and that it's a place where you don't have to worry about people saying nasty things about you if you post something that other people don't agree with. Was that by design?
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, look, all we want to do is talk about the Blazers. That's the only thing that matters. That's what we're centered around. And when we center around anything else, it goes astray. And look, saying nasty things about a person or any kind of ad hominem attack is simply centering around that person and centering around the prejudice instead of centering around the Blazers. And we've always said you can say anything you want as long as it's about the team and is a legitimate point of view, like not, you can't say racial slurs and call it about the team. That's not really about the team, But if you want to make a basketball point, you can agree, disagree. You can be as far out there as you want. That's what makes the site great. But what also makes it great is when you start trying to divert it into something else, if you start trying to make it about you or I start trying to make it about me, we're going to turn that around. And look, this site has never been about me. That's never been my point of view. It's always been presenting something to people that they'll find interesting to talk about, and watching them talk and joining in the discussion.
Have you ever had to ban someone or reprimand someone from the
site?
I mean,
lots. Yeah. Although, you know, it's to credit of Timmy and the Mods that when we were starting out, the curve was pretty deep, steep, I mean, and it was steep for all of us trying to figure out how to manage this site that was suddenly huge, right? But once we got in our rhythm and once the community got in its rhythm, everything went pretty smoothly. There was a time when we were probably routinely banning someone every month or two just because people were testing us and people didn't know. And you know, people loved the community but didn't understand what made it great. And also, I think people hadn't had counterexamples elsewhere. And I think everybody knows by now, if you don't moderate a discussion forum on the internet, that discussion forum is going to heck. I mean, it's going to be, you're just thrusting it down the garbage disposal. And so I think,
oh my gosh, anyone wants an example of that, you can go to my Facebook page and see what I started by posting my support of Colin Kaepernick.
Oh, wow. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, there's a fair way to discuss that. I mean, I've thought about it. It isn't really basketball related, so I haven't. But I have some definite thoughts on that, and I feel like I could bring it up on Blazer's Edge, and we could have a wonderful discussion about it, and that's the beauty of the site. But that only happens because it's moderated and because people care.
Right.
And I was going to say, too, you know, I don't think we've banned anyone new in the last year and a half, maybe two. Maybe there might be a couple fringe cases, but I mean, it's so rare that I can't even remember it happening barely now.
That's kind of amazing that you haven't been really can recall blocking anybody in that long. That's great. That says a lot about the whole community. And I've seen people sort of self-correcting or correcting each other before even the moderators got involved. So anyway, hat tip to you for getting that going. Now, how did the podcast get started?
Well, you know, we've had various stabs at various types of media. And Chris Lucia, who does the Weekend podcast along with Brandon Goldner, has always been a podcast advocate, and he's been the steadiest guy. I've kind of been in there a little bit, and of course I was in there with Phil Nason's quite steady in this round, and then you guys came on board, which was a masterstroke, because I'm a huge fan of you two. So you know, it's just been kind of other people carrying the torch as well. I don't feel like I necessarily started the podcast. I don't feel like I'm at the heart of the podcast. I feel like I'm one among many. I love this media. I've always loved radio. Used to listen to it when I was a kid often. Loved the old radio shows. Loved talk radio, except when it's incredibly stupid, which a lot of it is. So the idea that we might be bringing something interesting or smart to the fray just delights me. And that's why we keep doing it.
I listened to the podcast first before I really started visiting the site, and I just was hooked listening to you and Phil talked, and I was really hooked by your descriptive way of talking about the team and lots of metaphors and similes, and you talked a lot about, you know, obviously a lot about the way, like the way that you write. You and I have a very similar comparison that we make very often, but they're not quite the same. And you talk a lot about the Blazers, whether or not the cake is baked all the way. And I talk about them as cookies being baked. And we have sort of a similar thought that, like, you know, it's you mix all these ingredients together, you put them in a special way, but then you have to put it in the oven and take it out the right time. So I always appreciate when you bring that one up.
Analogies just make me hungry.
Exactly. That was KP1, though. I believe that was Kevin Pritchard who brought that up, who was very great, supportive guy, by the way. Pritchard, for whatever went on internally and however it ended up, he had a real knack for talking to and with people and a real connection, I think, to the broader community. And that was letting the cake bake, I believe, was his thing, or at least it came up during his tenure. A lot of people have used it, so I kind of use it in homage, and also because it's something people will readily understand. But that was one metaphor that was not mine.
Well, I like it, but although I do say that I think it's more like cookies, because the thing about cookies is you have a larger window that you can pull them out of the oven and still have a successful product. With a cake, like you gotta hit it at just the right time, otherwise it's dry and crumbly, or it's like still pudding in the middle. But cookies, you got a little bit more leeway, you know? A soft chocolate chip cookie is still pretty darn good, and you can even have a crunchy one and it's still pretty good. But anyway, I know that Joe is probably chomping at the bit to ask you some basketball questions. You wanna jump in here, Joe?
Yeah, let's switch this up and send it over to the game. The one thing that I really, really want to get to, so I'm going to ask it first, is I was wondering, what is your game philosophy? Meaning, like, what do you think is the best way to execute a good basketball game?
Well, it depends on your personnel, right? And I think this is why Terry Stotts is so good. Pound for pound, Stotts may be the best coach that the Blazers have ever had. Now, obviously, Jack Ramsey won a championship, and he was a huge innovator. So, he's the Hall of Fame guy, and rightly so. That said, 4 decades later, and with everything people have learned about basketball, Stotts has a knack for assimilating that, for parsing out what's most important, and for tailoring that to the staff that he has. And I think that it's been semi-brilliant the way that he's been able to keep his basic philosophy offensively of, kind of, a little bit of point guard dominance with Damian Lillard, and yet working in LaMarcus Aldridge, working in Wesley Matthews and Nikola Batum and the 3-point shots, and then transferring that to a team with far different ability, but also not abandoning the philosophy, saying, okay, here's what it looks like with Lillard and McCollum and Aminu now on the wing, who can't shoot the threes, but you got to take some. You take them when you're open, but we're also going to mix this in. He just takes his philosophy and massages it to the team he has, and I think that is the key to success. You can't fall in love with your own philosophy in the abstract. You have to fall in love with what's being carried out on the court.
So, do you think, given that there's any piece of advice that you would or could offer up to Terry Stotts for this coming year?
No, I mean, I wouldn't dare. I mean, we all know a thimbleful next to his, Detroit Lake or Willamette River, that I cannot imagine this going better. And I know people will say, well, the defense, well, the whatever, Okay, it's not that the team is perfect. It's not even that the system is perfect or executed perfectly. But look at what has gone on. I mean, you have reshuffled an entire team. You have personnel who don't know each other. You have a bunch of personnel with serious weaknesses and flaws in their game. One-dimensional, two-dimensional guys out there who are meshing like they were a jigsaw puzzle put together. I mean, Terry Stotts has done something that I think few other people in the world could do. And I that he hasn't won Coach of the Year, I think is a serious oversight. And yeah, I would say to Terry Stotts, you keep being Terry Stotts, and the rest of us will take notes and learn from you.
What about the team then? Because clearly I agree with you. I don't think any of us could really have anything to say to Terry Stotts to make him do his job better. But would you have any advice that you would give the team, say if you were at a practice or you saw him out on the town at Jackknife or something?
So they're on the right track, yeah. And I think they've got the talent, and I think they've got the desire. They just need time to get beat down a little bit, to have that brass ring be close and then get snatched away from them by someone who's tougher, by someone who knew how to work more efficiently, by someone who knew how to run plays right every time instead of, 85% of the time. I think a lot of that will come with experience. I would say to them, go out and milk that experience for everything that you're worth. Learn from your losses as much as you learn from your wins. Learn from the guy who beat you up how to intimidate and beat up others. And eventually, this is going to come good for you. Now, I don't know if, as currently constructed, this team can ever get to a championship level, but with some moves, you could see a door opening somewhere. But as the Roy Oden teams found out, when that door opens, if you're not ready, someone's just going to slam it on you. So you better take these early years to learn how to get your foot in the door or how to kick it down and get that other guy out of the way so that no one and nothing can take away from you what you are working for. Because if you leave the space open for them to do so, they are going to do it. So go and get what you want and make sure nobody can take it away.
You know, I think that that is a little bit like the like a part of Terry Stott's philosophy. I think he is really good at encouraging them to experience or take the experience from every game and learn something from it, whether it be good or bad. And I also think Damian Lillard, as a leader on the floor, definitely has that ability and that quality. So I think we can definitely put your advice to use this year. I think they're going to keep doing it. Tara and I have talked a lot about how they're the underdogs. They're the ones that are going to keep fighting when everybody else doesn't have any faith in them. And I think that's part of that as well. They're going to say, listen, we lost this game. You might call us terrible. You might say we can't play defense. You might say we can't set a good screen. You might say we can't put together fluid plays, but we're going to sit there and we're going to learn from everything that you're saying and everything we see on the tape and everything Terry Stott says to us and so on. So I think you're probably right. And I think this team is really good at doing that. So
Well,
who
that's
do
their
you think?
MO.
Oh, go
That
ahead.
is their MO. But this is the thing. You can't live as the underdog forever. You have to be the
Right.
big dog at some point. And the next maybe 2, 3 years are going to be a transition point for Damian Lillard, for CJ McCollum. Yes, you can be the cardiac kids, the surprise team that everyone overlooks, and you show them they're wrong. But at the same time, they're right in that you're better than we thought you'd be, but you ain't that good yet. You haven't done anything yet. Can you become the big dog that rules the yard? Eventually, that's all that matters. And if you are not working toward that, then everything you're doing is just a nice headline or two, and then eventually the glory is going to go to someone else.
Put me in, coach. I'm ready. I'm so inspired
Agreed.
now. Okay, I want to jump in and ask a question about defense.
Sure.
I've been listening to a lot of podcasts and people are starting to do their, preseason predictions and da 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 da, and I've been listening to a lot of the national ones because I like to get national perspective on what's going on. And people are like, they're saying, oh, Portland was number 21 in defense, so they're not going to be any good at defense, and da 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 da. And what I don't understand is, to me, it seems completely obvious, and Terry Stotts even said it seems completely obvious that last year was about offense and getting everybody in the flow, uncomfortable with each other. They were doing the things that everybody was best at, and that is scoring points. And I just assumed all along that this year was going to be the year that they were going to focus on defense. Is that like totally out of my mind to think that a coach would like spend more time on offense 1 year and then turn around and do defense the next year? It just seems pretty logical to me.
Well, you don't succeed with young teams, and especially young teams with 20-point scoring guards, by stifling the offense and preaching only defense. You've got to get the confidence there first. You've got to get a positive feedback loop going. I think there are a lot of coaches who philosophically start with defense first. Often they were champions in the league, and they realize that that's how the whole thing is won. But the problem is that they're teaching at a 13-year level when their young players are actually in their third year, and they beat them down and beat them down, and then they lose them. I don't think that's Terry Stott's thing. He's going to go with what you're best at first, make sure you're doing that, and then make up the rest. So, no, I don't think you're crazy. At the same time, look, you're not going to live with two defensive holes in your backcourt. Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum, if they're going to play together, have to get better at this. Not only because it's impossible to make up for it no matter who you put in the front court, but because the impetus, the momentum also starts from the top, the leaders on the team, and they are the two leaders. And if they get by just on their offense, because that's what they got paid for, then that's what everybody beneath them is going to do too. So whether they focus on it or not is kind of immaterial. If their stars don't do it, I don't think anybody else is going to be able to make up for it.
I appreciate that perspective that you bring, that there a lot of coaches do it the other way. That makes more sense to me. I think in the long run we're going to see more defense and we're going to see improvement from those guys, but I understand now that you sort of explained that perspective that some other coaches bring to it and why that would be, you know, a theme that I'm hearing from other regions when they're talking about our team.
Do you honestly think, and I might get yelled at for this by the listeners, but do you think CJ is going to get better at defense?
CJ McCollum get better at defense? I think so. I think both he and Lillard will, because experience makes a difference. Okay. But the question,
I should rephrase,
is,
in an impactful way.
Yeah, that's the big question. Now, they don't have to become Avery Bradley, okay? They don't have to become stoppers. I wish they would. This team would instantly get better if they were like Boston's backcourt. But that's probably not going to happen. But they need to hold their own. And the analogy that I always turn to is Terry Porter and Clyde Drexler, neither one of whom were very invested in defense early in their careers. They were considered kind of a weak defensive backcourt. But you got Jerome Kersey, you got Buck Williams covering for them, but they also took pride in it. I remember one of the assistant coaches at the time said, look, these guys used to come off the court talking about the dunk that they executed or how many points they scored. Now they come off the court saying, did you see me stop that guy? And once Lillard and McCollum get that kind of attitude, provided their physical skills and, you know, their inclinations lean that way, I think this team will be good enough to at least post an adequate defense.
Well, I'm going to be watching CJ fairly closely this year, because I'm just in the camp of I don't think he's ever going to be a super impactful defensive player. But speaking of players that we'll be watching, who is it that you will be watching the most this year? And what do you expect from that particular player?
Well, my co-host Dan Morang would just kill me if I didn't say Myers Leonard, because that's his guy. That's Myers everything. Not that he's like a super fan or anything like that, just Myers is intriguing. And I think that is one of the stories to watch, because I think, I mean, they're gonna do Aminu at power forward. I get it, kind of, but I'm still waiting to see on that. Mason Plumlee has made strides at center. I think he's decent, but that's certainly not an ironclad position there. Myers Leonard, if he really steps forward, will earn some playing time. So that's a huge one. I think Plumlee is another interesting case. Obviously, everybody's going to have their eye on Evan Turner and see what kind of difference he makes. Personally, McCollum is as interesting as anybody to me as well, because I don't think we saw really good CJ, but I think he's got another year. I think that he could produce even better games for longer streaks of time and really go on some scoring tears if he's allowed to in the offense. So that'll be fascinating too.
So like I said, I'm going to watch CJ, and I hope that he really progresses. You're going to watch Myers. Well, I'm sorry, Dan's going to watch Myers. You're going to watch both Myers, Plumlee, and then CJ. Tara, who are you going to be watching?
Well, you know I'm watching Myers. I can't wait until it happens, and I want to be there. I want to be there that game where everything clicks and it just goes, oh, like, I think it was like game 6 of the finals, when you could just see the look on Tristan Thompson's face when he just got it, and he was like, this is where you've been wanting me to stand all along. I think we're going to have some of those fantastic aha moments with Myers, where all those reps that he's been putting in and trying to get in on the floor, they're going to pay off and things are going to start to become more natural for him. And you know how I feel about Myers. I could go on, but I'll stop. Also, Ed Davis. Maybe. I always forget to bring up Ed Davis because I think that he is we always have these long conversations and at the end of it, it's like, oh yeah, Ed Davis. But I do want to remember to keep my eye on him because I think he's a really fun player to watch.
Maybe it will happen at opening night when you and I are there together. Maybe that's the magic combination that Myers Leonard needs.
I wonder, I don't know if he's going to be back by then. I think we might have to wait a few more weeks.
Oh, I forgot. I forgot.
Yeah, right. I think we might have to, we're going to have to figure out who should we watch for on opening night, Dave? Who do you think is going to, needs to come right out the gate and make a big splash?
Well, I'm going to watch for you two. You get your big old fan lists poster. We heart you, Myers, and you know, make him turn around and wave to you or something like that.
I'm gonna I believe in you, Evan Turner.
Well, there you go.
I believe in you, Evan Turner.
I am all for an Evan Turner sign. I am way too excited about him, so I'm all about it. Let's make a great sign for Evan Turner.
Okay.
Turn around. Yeah, do you get some Turner puns going?
Dave, you live out of town, right? Did you go to many games when you were here living in town, though, when you were like growing up or when you were a young adult?
We were not the type to be able to afford tickets when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. I did go to quite a spate of games when I was in college. Used to wait outside G.I. Joe's mm-hmm. and old and dark so I could be the first in line to get tickets, and so would go to about 15-20 games a year for a few seasons there.
Remember when they put the announcement in the paper, for you had to watch for the announcement in the paper that the tickets were going to go on sale, and then you had to like plan to show up, and then you could only buy so many tickets, and like you had to know exactly which games and how many tickets you were gonna, and you had, oh my gosh, it used to be so,
and there was a limit. And yeah. they're people listening to us right now who are going, what's G.I. Joe's and what's showing up and what's a paper?
Why did you have to wait outside?
Dude, why did you just do iPad? Whatever. Yes.
The iPad.
Yeah, we used to have Uber when we were kids. It was called being kidnapped. But anyway, so yeah, I mean, all that stuff. But most of my games have been remote, which really has taught me to do what I do. It is a much different experience being there in person and trying to analyze and being able to watch it on TV, to scroll back, to freeze frame, to do all kinds of stuff. And really, I don't think one is necessarily superior to the other, having done both, that there are advantages to each. Each is a different flavor. And, I almost prefer it that way. Maybe I'm getting old now, but I prefer to be able to sit on my couch and take notes and analyze at will. So, yeah, I doubt that I will ever be 41 games in the Rose Garden, but I get to one or two a year at least to enjoy the atmosphere. And, of course, we love sending all the kids to Blazers Edge Night and all that. So they're kind of my surrogates. 2,000 of them go in my stead.
So what resource do you use? Do you have the NBA League Pass and you watch mm-hmm. games that way? Okay.
Yeah. League Pass.
Because, that doesn't work for people living in Portland.
Yes, that is why it's also an advantage not to necessarily be writing in the same city that the team you're reporting on. There are several advantages. You're also remote enough to where you can't really be touched. There are advantages to blogging from Boise. So I take advantage of all of them. But of course, most of our staff is there in Portland, so they've got that part covered.
I do have one more basketball specific question for you. I wanted to know which play that you love the most, or if you even have a favorite play.
Which play do I love the most? Mm-hmm. Rasheed Wallace alley-oop. I'll get real specific. I'll put names to it. Rasheed Wallace alley-oop is great. Jerome Kersey dunk. Kiki Vandeweghe three-pointer was always sterling. But so was Wesley Matthews. Bow and arrow was always fun. And anything that Brandon Roy did that involved more than one change of direction and three dribbles was absolutely gourmet basketball. So those would be my spate of favorites.
What about you, Joe? What play do you love the most?
You know, if we're just going to talk in general terms, I really love A well set screen. I love it. I love
When you, why do you love the Blazers then? I mean, you've been
it.
longing for many years
I
then.
know, right? That's what I'm waiting for, Dave. That's why I'm not a bandwagon fan. I'm just waiting for it. I'll wait as long as I have
Set
to.
a screen for Joe, guys. That screen was not Joe worthy.
That's how I'm gonna start rating them. Where is it on the Joe scale?
Exactly.
Well, Tara, I think we are about at the time where you have a fun little speed round set up for us. Is that or is that not correct?
So, of course, we had a lot more questions that we wanted to ask you, but some of these are just kind of fun. And so we thought maybe we could have like a speed round where we'll ask you a bunch of questions and you could just give a short answer where we don't have to go into it deeply. So, if you're game, I'll go ahead and get started with that.
I will be so short that you'll have time for two or three of your unasked questions at the end. I promise.
You don't have to rush. It's no
I'll
rush.
discipline myself like Mike Rice. I will
Oh,
channel Mike Rice and give a short answer.
we're channeling Mike Rice now. This
Oh,
could,
yeah.
I don't have a bleeper button. I don't know. Okay. So, if you were a basketball player, what position would you play?
Used to be centered, but now definitely point guard. I love the assist and setting up the play.
And what player would you model your game after?
Oh, as a point guard, probably Andre Miller, but with a three-point shot. Oh, that is such a good answer.
Oh, I miss him so much. I'll just be like sitting there randomly and just be like, oh, I miss Andre Miller. I don't
So
know
now
why.
you know what to do to delight the Fanalist readers. Just type Andre Miller in the comment section and just like, ooh, you'll get to at least two
I think my very
recs.
favorite Blazer game ever, except for, of course, when we won the championship, was Andre Miller's 52-point game. That was the best. And then the next day, somebody cut together the Brian Wheeler call of all 52 points. And I've listened to that like 30 times, probably.
You should put the link to that on this
I will find it
podcast.
because it is awesome. It's and
Save that.
at the end, they interview him and they're like, how did you feel about it? He's like, I don't know, man. I was just so tired.
If you ever have to have an MRI and sit still for 2 hours, you just have them put that on loop.
Yeah, that would be
Big
awesome.
smile in there.
Okay, so we got off track. Let's
That's right.
see. What is your most prized piece of Blazers memorabilia?
I have a bunch in storage, but I don't really keep them out anymore. It's part of being in the media. I mean, you realize that a lot of it is salesmanship and, you lose your innocence that way. So it's harder to like put them up and go, yay. But, I have the wonderful poster, the uh-oh poster, I think still from the Drexler years of four Blazers charging down the court right at you, right at the camera. That one's a great one. But really my prized memorabilia are memories, like, slapping Clyde Drexler's hand on the way down the tunnel, or, other things like that, just moments. Jerome Kersey's dunk in the perfect first quarter, which I was there for, and it was amazing. So stuff like that is what really sticks with you rather than the posters and caps and stuff.
I'm not gonna lie, mine may or may not be my Damon Stoudamire Beanie Baby.
Oh, that's so sweet.
I have a Detlef Schrempf one. Yes, but I've told the story on the podcast before that that also has a lot of nostalgia for me because that was the game I begged my father to take me to because I loved Damon Stoudamire. And he told me we couldn't afford it. And so he got me out of school. He surprised me, like picked me up from school. We drove up to Portland. We had dinner and I was like, Dad, we have to be in line because only the first 5,000 people are getting the Damon Stoudamire Beanie Baby. So he made sure we were there early enough that I got a Beanie Baby and I was really close to my father. So it has a lot of, you're right, there's a memories add a lot to it. So
I will tell
that's a
you
good point.
this story. Baby point guard went to his first Blazer game last year with me, and we were sitting, and he'd seen him on TV a little bit, but didn't quite know how to process it live until people around him started cheering, and he went, "Oh, cheering!" And he started cheering with them, and then it was all quiet, and he was going, "Let's go Blazers!" And everybody like turned around and started
Oh.
chanting with him, and he was like, "This is the greatest thing ever. You can chant defense and you can chant lots of things and people like it." And it's like, yeah.
That's so great. Wow. What is my memory for you as dad, like of, you know, what it's like to like watch your son start the chant? I mean, there's just nothing like it when you're the first person to yell it and everybody starts joining you. And yeah, that's awesome. Okay, I'll tell you my favorite piece of Blazer memorabilia, which might be sort of surprising, is I think these days anyway, it's my LaMarcus Aldridge pint glass, because, and here's why. So I had two sets of that. Was that from like 3 or 4 years ago? Where the Blazers like reintroduced the pint, or you know, the drinking glasses, and I had two full sets, and I was like, I'm gonna drink out of it. I'm not gonna not use them, because I know a lot of people get them and like they don't use them because they want to preserve them. But I was like, I'm not gonna not use them, so I want to make sure I use them. And then I had this realization. I was like, oh my God, this must be what Neil Olshay's life is like. Like, you have all these prized possessions and you have to use them, but they can't break, because if they break, they're gone forever. And so after I collected all of those, the only one I have left that is not broken is my LaMarcus Aldridge one.
Somehow, I do not think Neil Olshay has a LaMarcus Aldridge pint glass still. I am guessing that one flew off the back porch, out into the street, and rolled into the lake.
I betcha he still has one. I betcha.
Speaking of my favorite blazer of all time, if you did ask me to choose between my Damon Stoudamire Beanie Baby and my game-worn signed LaMarcus Aldridge jersey, I'm sorry, the Beanie Baby's gonna go. So,
I'll
but
take your
also,
Beanie Baby in for you if you really need to
okay.
get rid of it.
Dave, I feel like you haven't told us who your favorite blazer of all time was. Did you? Did I miss that?
No, I don't think so. I love Richard Anderson. Always have. He was like a scrub. He was a stretch four before stretch fours were a thing, and he was slightly overweight. And he was just, he was like, what he did was basically shoot mid-range to long jumpers. And I was like, if I made it in the NBA, I would be him. So I've always held a soft spot for Richard Anderson. I mean, and they're the obvious ones, the guys that stood out in every era. Roy was a big one. Aldridge, of course. Who can not like Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum? It's like a federal offense not to like them. Go back through Drexler, Rasheed Wallace, terminally underrated now because of how his tenure ended, but fantastic players. So now I mostly appreciate skill. I mostly appreciate execution. So I don't really have a sentimental favorite as much as I go, wow, that guy really was great.
Well, our speed round is not very
I
speedy.
know.
Tara, get us back
I had
on
a couple
track.
more. Defense or offense? What's your favorite aspect of the game?
Oh, defense until you see a really great offensive play.
Okay, my last one. What is your favorite Blazers involved song? So you can, like, over all the years, we had all these great Blazer hits. It can include Dame Dala if you want.
Well, at my age, it just Bust a Bucket is the anthem of our generation. I mean, and there were some KEX radio ones that were great at the time too. Taking Care of Business was always a fun one. Yeah, no, it's got to be Bust a Bucket.
Joe, yours?
I don't think I'll ever love anything more than I loved Can I Get a Headband?
I knew you were gonna say that one. I liked Rip City Rhapsody. I mean, that was, I
That
love
was
that one.
Lord.
No one
Oh,
ever brings
ouch.
that one up.
Well, because it kind of
Rip
sucked. It's like,
City Rhapsody. Clever wordplay. There's nothing I like more than clever wordplay. And that one was amazing. Everybody go back and listen to Rip City Rhapsody.
or not.
And Bust a Bucket and Can I Get a Headband?
And can I get a
We'll have to give links to all those.
Yeah.
Well, Joe, do you have any more questions that you wanted to ask that we didn't get around to?
I
Go
do
ahead, fire one
actually.
or two more. Go
I
ahead.
do actually have one final question. On a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you miss Phil?
Phil? That'll always be a 10, baby. I mean, and that's no slight at all to Dan. I love working with Dan, too. We have a different kind of chemistry, also good. But nothing will ever replace Phil. And it's really funny because Phil was East Coasty, you know, he was that guy. And that doesn't always play in Portland for everybody. And that's been true for forever. That's been true since, you know, the Fan began sports radio stuff way back in the day. And they'd bring in people from California or the East Coast and people go, oh, this isn't Portland. But Phil did Phil's thing really well. And he's just so polar opposite from me that you had to laugh. I mean, if you weren't laughing at oil and water, if you weren't laughing at the shtick, then I think you were just taking it in the wrong spirit. But anyway, yeah, so totally a 10. Although Phil would insist it should be at least a 12. So maybe give him that.
Oh, man, I loved listening to you and Phil. And nothing against Dan or anything, but that's how I started. So I'm going to always have this nostalgic memory of you and Phil because that's how I started listening to the podcast. And, you know, when I started my whole Stay LA movement, you guys were the first people I reached out to before any, like, media outlets or anything like that, like the newspapers or other websites. I went to you guys first because I loved listening to you so much.
Oh, well, thanks. And because that's really the prudent thing to do. I mean, no joke. I mean, we talked about the beginning at the beginning. It's really funny because now ask me what job I would move to if offered instead of managing editor of Blazer's Edge. And there aren't any. I mean, they wouldn't pay me enough to make me move to anything. I mean, it's not better working for the team. It's not better working for the paper. It's not better working anywhere than it is working here. So, I mean, I'm proud of where the site has gone. And that's not me. That's the work of a lot of people. And we have a fantastic staff. And it's just a great experience.
I would say, Dave, though, that you're the matchmaker who made it all, you know, that allows it to blossom and turn into what it is because of your seeing, you know, opportunities for people that maybe they didn't know they would be good at. You'd be like, hey, why don't you try doing this thing? And, you know, that I think that's one of the things that's also made Blazer's Edge really good is you're just, being able to help people find their best voice. So I do appreciate that.
That's how the Fanalist came to be.
Yay. Best move ever. I mean, there is a little, I mean, Lorne Michaels SNL vibe to it. And I've embraced that role. I mean, look, ever since, you know, when Ben came on, I had a choice early on. It's like, you know, this guy's really good, obviously. Now I can keep the site about me, a cult of personality or whatever, but then it's never going to be more than me and it's not going to be what it should be. And so Ben had the obvious talent. And so, you know, I dialed it back a few notches and he dialed it up a few notches and history was made. And that vibe has just continued through the second half of the site's life to where now we have 20 odd people, a couple dozen people.
Odd. All of
whom, yeah. Well, we are too.
Thanks, Dave.
That's making and their talents are shining. And if you look now, I mean, my gosh, every day there's stuff that I never would have dreamed of, let alone been able to do. So I think that the fruits of that have borne out well.
Well, thank you again, Dave, for all that you do for this site, for having the foresight to put Tara and I together and to bring other people on and to make it as what it is today. And thank you for joining us and telling us your story. Do you want to remind everyone real quick where they can find you on the internet?
Where they can find me?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's blazersedge.com. at Dave Deckard or at Blazer's Edge Twitter, although Brandon Goldner runs our, you know, our official Twitter account, but they usually link my stuff. And, you know, so find the site's Facebook and you'll see stuff linked there too. But if you want personal opinions and politics and all that stuff, that's at Dave Deckard on Twitter, or just, you know, follow me on site for the basketball stuff.
I'll be looking out to see what you say about Colin Kaepernick.
Well, yeah, nothing. I probably won't type about that, but look, I mean, I can give it to you.
All
You want
right.
to make that a speed round? It's really quick.
Do
It
it.
does no good to honor a symbol if you don't also make sure that what the symbol stands for is everything it can be. And when someone reminds you that that symbol might be falling short, you don't gripe at them about the reminder. You look introspectively and say, they have a point. Let's all stand for something much more than a piece of cloth. Let's stand for what the cloth is supposed to represent. So, I have no problem with that expression. I think that the fact it's spreading wider shows that there are issues we need to address. I don't think the not standing will last forever, and I don't think it'll ever be more than a small percentage of people, but I think we should pay attention to what they're saying instead of paying attention to being incensed about the symbol that we feel is threatened by it.
I could not agree with you more. And folks, if you want more gems from Dave, make sure to listen to he and Dan. Their podcast comes out most weeks on Tuesdays, unless the panelists take over. We do that occasionally, every now and again. His show is great. Their show is great, I should say. We always learn something new from them, and we're always super entertained. And then, of course, don't forget Chris and Brandon. They bring you the weekend edition, and they have lots of fun guests, and they also have a ton to say. In general, everybody that contributes to the Blazers Edge podcast is fun to listen to, and there's always something to learn. So make sure to tune in, and thanks for listening to us today.